summer series last week called Wondering, where we're looking at some of the questions that Jesus asked. Jesus is often regarded as the answer man, the one who gives the answers, but he extends exponentially more questions than answers. Because questions are powerful and they're full of potential. Questions like, will you marry me? Powerful and full of potential. Or questions like, how do I look in this outfit? Powerful and full of a different kind of potential. Questions can build up, or questions can tear down. Questions can lead to learning and identity. And questions can put a fork in the road that demand an answer and force us to take a position, like cat or dog person. You know, you could put it in the comments and we could have a survey to see who wins, cat or dog people. But good questions bring up important answers. And nobody asks better questions than Jesus. Jesus doesn't ask us questions so much for him to learn an answer from us, but because he wants us to learn something about ourselves and him. Jesus asks great questions. And we're going to look at one such question. And before I get to it, though, I want to set the scene. It's the question's in John 9, near the end of it. But in John 9, Jesus, he sees this blind beggar. And he heals him in a unique way. Think mud on eyes and sending him to a pool. I talked about it on our Facebook page on Thursday if you want to learn some more of the background. But Jesus heals this blind beggar. And immediately after that, the community, his neighbors, his friends, rather than celebrate this man and his healing, they start an uproar. His neighbors start interrogating him, not believing him, not believing that he had been healed, not believing in who Jesus was. So they bring this man to the religious leaders who start to accuse him of horrible things and start hurling terrible insults at him. The religious leaders bring his parents into it, and his parents are like, this is an intense moment. Talk to our son. He's an adult. We don't want to be brought into this mess. So this man's parents, his friends, his neighbors, his community, his religious leaders, they abandon him and hurl comments like, you were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you talk to us? And ultimately, they expel him. They kick him out from the community. Apparently, cancel culture has existed for a long time. And it's here where we pick up the story after this man had been kicked out of the community. Starting in verse 35, we read this. Jesus heard that they had thrown him out. And when he found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? Who is he, sir? The man asked. Tell me so that I may believe in him. Jesus said, you have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you. Then the man said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. Jesus said, for judgment I have come into this world, so that the blind will see and those who see will become blind. Some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, what? Are we blind too? Jesus said, if you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains. Picture this moment. This man had been able to see for mere moments, and his eyes' maiden voyage was filled of people being angry with him and yelling at him and abusing him. And then in verse 35, it captures my heart. We read that when Jesus had heard they threw him out, he went and he found him. Jesus notices the hurting. And he pursues the rejected. John Chrysostom wrote, they had kicked him out of the temple, but the Lord of the temple found him. This is just what Jesus does. And I love, in the verse it says, this man, he's speaking with you. Jesus pursues and he doesn't speak at or to, he speaks with us in our hurting and in our pain. And Jesus asks this man a question. Do you believe in the Son of Man? Now, it's easy for us to read that from our side of history. We read this, we know that this is Jesus talking. But the man that Jesus was talking with, he didn't know that it was Jesus at this point. He had been blind at their last interaction. So a stranger comes up and says, hey, do you believe in the Son of Man? Do you believe in the Son of God? He's asking a very personal yes or no question. Yes, he believed, or no, he didn't. And I love the man's response. He says, who is he, sir? The man asks. Tell me so that I may believe in him. Isn't it funny that Jesus here is called sir? You know, he's called a lot of things, but it's not often sir. That just doesn't happen often. But the man says, I want to believe. Can you help me? Can you show me so I can believe in him? And this man's response shows that a desire had been stirred up in his heart. A longing had been uncovered. Jesus asked a question and then uncovered and brought a longing to the surface. This is what Pastor James taught us last week, that good questions reveal our inner longings. So Jesus says, do you believe? He's like, I want to. Help me. Show me where so I can. And I am convinced that we are living in a world, and particularly in a culture, that is desperately looking for something or someone to believe in. This often plays out by pursuing bad answers, but everyone is looking to believe in something, and our world is crying out, show me so I can believe. Jesus responds, you have now seen him. In fact, he's the one speaking with you. How cool is that? The very thing that Jesus enabled in this man, his vision, was now the vehicle used to encounter Jesus. The place of pain became the place of experiencing God. Jesus has this mysterious way of taking our pain, taking our hardships, and turning them for good. Not causing them, but using and redeeming and healing them so we can encounter him in new ways. And it's on that note that I want to change gears for just a few moments. Each week through this series, we're hoping to have conversations with people from our FAC community to explore these questions and to see how they play out in our lives. And today, I'm excited to talk with a friend of mine. You may recognize her as Me, Me, All Mine. I know her as Rosalyn or Rosie, and it's a privilege to be able to work with her. And she has wanted to share her story with our church family. So, Rosie, thank you for taking the time to join us and to share a little bit of your story.
Thanks for having me here. That's fun. Yeah. And it's, by the way, it's Mimi Almanay, not
Almanay. Mimi Almanay.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, okay. I should have known there would be some kind of fancy accent. Just stands to reason with Mimi's personality. Hey, can you just tell us a little bit about who you are and your family?
Sure. My name is Rosalind, or Rosie, and I'm married to a guy named Mark, and we have two kids, Theo and Maggie. Theo's 2, and Maggie is 2 months old, and it's almost impossible to get a nice picture with a 2-year-old, so that's as best as we could do.
Great picture.
Yeah, so that's us.
How long have you been a part of FAC?
I started coming when I was 4 years old.
Okay, so a couple years.
Yeah, a few. 25 years, actually.
Yeah.
So I remember when it was on Glenmore Trail,
uh-huh.
And then here we are. So it's been... I actually met my husband here.
Met your husband here?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and we met in the youth group. It was called Oxygen at the time, I think,
right.
When we were doing really cool names for everything.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah, didn't date then, though. But he was dating someone else.
Well, I mean, stomp the landing, though, if you're married now, so.
Exactly, yeah. I remember I went home and I messaged, or I MSN'd my friend and was like, Mark is so cute.
Right.
And then he was dating my other friend, so. Oops.
MSN, okay. So, other than FAC being like the locus of where you met your husband, you've been here for a long time. So,
yeah.
What's your favorite part about FAC?
I thought about this. I think what I love the most is, I mean, the community, but that's been a little different. But what I really love is that FAC is a church after Jesus, and it's a church that isn't afraid to go there with certain topics. So I know a lot of my friends are surprised when I'm saying what we're talking about, and I think that's cool to be able to surprise people by actually talking about, hot topics, I guess, and things that they don't expect.
Awesome. So not only are you a longtime attender and member of FAC, and you're not just this viral sensation of Mimi, you actually you spend a lot of time around here as well.
Yeah.
Maternity leave at the moment, that's lovely and all things good, but what fills your days here when you are working?
A few things. It's a very strange job, but basically it's taking the creative elements and the technical elements and coordinating those, and so sometimes it's a lot of meetings, but it's a lot of just talking to people. One weekend I had to make bread in the tunnels on the way in so that the room smelled like bread, and that, I don't remember why, but anyway, it can be a lot of different things, and I also manage the social media, so Amy's been covering those things while I've been away, and she's doing a great job. So,
great job, Amy.
Yeah.
So, but if you see something online or if you ever message FAC, you have often been the smiling face on the other end of that?
Yes. Yeah. Me and Corey worked tag team, and Corey's obviously the online pastor, but he and I work a lot together. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Anyway, it's nice to talk about that. Being on mat leave, I feel like I forgot what I forgot that I'm a person sometimes.
Yes.
Anyway.
So often you're kind of the quarterback calling all the plays and sending everyone where they need to go for weekends. It's a complex and great job, important job, and you and Amy are brilliant at it. So thank you for doing that.
It's a lot of fun. It's my dream job.
Awesome.
Anyway.
I would love to just talk about your job and how good you are at it, but I would also love for you to share a little bit of your story with us this weekend.
Yeah, so I'll dive right into it, changing paces, but last June, so we had our son in 2017, and last June we decided that we wanted to have, or last June we found out we were pregnant again, and it was very exciting. She or he was going to be due on Valentine's Day, and our son was born on Halloween, so we thought that was kind of fun. But then also last June, we found out that we were not going to have another baby. I was driving away from the doctor's appointment where I was pretty sure, well, I went to the appointment pretty sure we were losing our baby, and the next day in the emergency room, they confirmed that we were losing our baby, and it was probably the first time that I had prayed a really, really high-stakes, desperate prayer, and I felt like God let me down, and so... I drove away asking God to stop this miscarriage from happening and said, and I really believed that he would, because in my whole life he's never let me down. So I was expecting that he would stop it, and he didn't. And so at the moment, I don't think I really realized how it affected my faith long term. And I would have said that I trusted God, and I said all those things, and I think it was just kind of a blur. I was just kind of coping as best I could. And then September came along, and we found out we were pregnant again, which was, I know that doesn't happen for a lot of people, so it was a miracle that that happened. And I also had a really hard time believing that that was real. But so September came along, and we had signed up to go to Thailand on a missions trip. And I immediately, when I found out I was pregnant, I decided I wasn't going to go to Thailand because I knew there was Zika virus there, and I wasn't about to expose this baby to any risk, because we'd lost our baby, our last baby, so I wasn't about to risk that. And I told my husband I wasn't going, and he said, well, did God call you, or did God call you? And I was mad at him, because I was like, how dare you? How can you ask me to risk this life of this baby after you know what we've been through? And the next day I went to talk to Brianna, the Share Ministries pastor, and she said the exact same thing to me. And I was like mad, but I didn't know why I was mad. And as an external processor, as she and I talked, it occurred to me that I didn't trust God And I straight out told her, I said, I don't trust him with this life because he let me down last time. So why would I give God another chance with this baby? And like, this is such an avoidable risk. Why would I do that? And she quoted two verses to me that have been pivotal in my life. One of them was, this is how we know what love is. Christ laid down his life for us, so we lay down our lives for the others. It's 1 John 3:16. And I just remember thinking it was very odd that she just pulled that verse and another one out of her hat just randomly. And so it kind of got my attention. And I went home wondering, I've never in my life been angry at God. And I always thought it was like a lack of faith when people said they were angry at God. And then suddenly I realized I have been holding on to anger with God, and I had been not trusting God, and I'd never lived in that space before. I've always trusted him. He's always come through for me. So this was kind of uncharted territory. And so I had to face the reality that I had to decide, did I trust God or do I not trust God? And what was I going to do about it? Because was I going to go to Thailand or not? I had a timeline to make that decision. And I took a lot of processing and a lot of prayer. And I eventually did come to a spot where I realized I had to live for an audience of just one, because I knew if I went to Thailand and I came back with Zika and our baby was born with Zika, that the whole world was going to look at me like I was an idiot. And why would she risk that? And I actually had a doctor ask me when I came back, why did you go to Thailand? That was pretty risky. And someone else said, I'm really surprised you went to Thailand, very condescending. And I guess I jumped ahead. I did go, but getting there was, I had to be okay with the fact that I could lose a baby because God didn't promise that he would protect that baby. That wasn't the promise of God. The promise of God was that he would be with me. And I had to be okay with that being enough. And I think prior to that, my whole life, I was okay with, or I loved God for what he could do for me, because he'd always done good things for me. So when suddenly and I guess he always has done good things for me, but I'd never been faced with the reality that life happens and sometimes he just walks through life with, and he always walks through life with you. But anyway,
I love Mark and Brianna. Like, I love them both, and I love how they just give you this like question. Well, did he call you or not? It's a binary yes or yeah. No, and they're both those kind of people, and they've both been
They are both very like, this happens a lot even when we go to restaurants. Yeah. They ordered the same meal, and Brianna's husband and I ordered the same meal, so I wasn't surprised when they asked me that question.
Thank you for sharing that and the journey. It's always hard to share your story, and it always takes courage and vulnerability. But I find in these kind of moments where you're just that much more removed from people, and it's just, thousands of people will watch this at some point. And so thank you for your vulnerability in sharing that. Would you say that there was any kind of like major defining moments along the way in that journey, or was it kind of just a continual step by step, or were there like
probably a mix of both? I think it was a lot of processing and praying. After I realized I wasn't trusting God, I had to realize, okay, well, do I want to trust God or do I want to trust myself? And I, after a lot, actually, it didn't take very long for me to figure out trusting myself is I'm not qualified to run my own life. And so that meant I had to trust God, but that also meant I had to trust God with him being the only thing that I need. So letting go of all the things, like realizing I could lose a baby, I could lose everything, and he had to be enough all by himself. And it was in a church service one weekend where I actually got to participate in it, rather than sitting in the tech booth, and we sang Raise a Hallelujah, which had been an important song throughout the miscarriage. I remember just singing that over and over again. And as we were singing that song, the line, Heaven comes to fight for me, stuck out suddenly. And I just realized it felt like it was God saying, I'm going to fight for you. Come on, just do it. And it was really hard for me to go, well, you didn't fight for me last time. That's what was going through my head. And I just felt God going, just trust me. And so I did. And so I said, okay, I'm going to go to Thailand. And that trip was not really, everybody said, how is Thailand? And honestly, like, it was a great trip, learned a lot, but it wasn't about that for me. It was about the deciding to go and the just very, for an emotional decision, it was also not emotional. It was very like, okay, I decided years ago that I was going to follow Jesus. So am I actually going to follow him or am I not? And so in that moment, I decided I would. And it was kind of black and white, like, okay, well, this is what following him looks like, so I guess I'll just do it. And even if it doesn't feel good at the time, and it doesn't really make a lot of sense to people, I did it. And so that was probably the biggest moment, was in that song and singing that.
Wow. That's beautiful.
Thanks.
Well, thank you for sharing with us, sharing your story, sharing your life with us, and so much of your time, not just this particular weekend, but how you and Mark, you know, Mark with youth, and just how you guys pour into this community. FAC is better.
Oh, thanks.
In so many ways because of the Coben family. So thank you, and particularly thank you for your time this weekend.
Thanks for having me. It was good to kind of go back and remember everything. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Well, in the comments, you can say thanks, Rozzy, or Mimi, for joining us. But I, as we were kind of preparing and talking for this weekend, there were so many similar elements between the passage that we've been looking at and the questions that we've been looking at and Rozzy's story. In John 9, there's, well, whose fault is it that this guy is blind? And they want to have blame for the hardships and the difficulties, and people are saying, well, where is Jesus in this? Who is Jesus? And all of these kind of questions were being hurled at this blind man, and the blind man was processing himself and talking with Rozzy. There, like, a lot of these questions were there, but when Jesus brought up to the blind man saying, do you believe in the Son of Man? It was really this binary question. And like Rozzy, this formerly blind man had to choose, do I or do I not trust? And the blind man, as we read just a few moments ago, he responds by saying, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. Notice that Jesus is no longer called Sir. He says, Lord, I believe. And it's credited to him as his worship. He saw Jesus and he believed, and that is his worship. And we learn in that one sentence that believing in Jesus is worshiping Jesus in the hardships, in the healing, in the questions and in the interrogations, in the being expelled from the community, when there's so many reasons to quit, to doubt, to give up, to wonder or wander. Having courage to believe in Jesus is worship. Believing in the midst of our pain is powerful worship. We see that with this man in his pain, in his vulnerability, being marginalized. I believe. And in Rozzy's story, with doubts and fears and anger and loss and grief and pain, I believe. Jesus recognizes that this yes or no question has significant consequences. Like all binary questions, how you respond has consequences. A yes simultaneously is a no to everything else. And Jesus is unapologetically placing a fork in the road and asking this man to choose. Choose your own adventure. And Jesus knew that this would cause tension. He knew that this would be difficult for some of the people that were listening, not only for the man to choose, but for all of the people listening. And so he continues and he says, for judgment I have come into this world so that the blind will see and that those who see will become blind. Now, for sure, that language of for judgment can come across as a little bit unsettling. I mean, doesn't Jesus say, I did not come to judge the world, but to save it? Jesus knows that a fork in the road necessarily has consequences both ways. One pastor described this passage like a doctor that is called to amputate a man's arm because of a horrible affection. Just before the patient goes under, he asks, doctor, did you come to cut my arm off? The doctor answers, I didn't become a doctor to cut off arms, but to save lives. That's what Jesus is saying. And Jesus is showing the truth that he taught, that he lived, that he revealed would either be a cornerstone for someone to build their life upon or a stumbling stone that would cause people to trip. There's just no other option. I recently read a great description of Jesus' stories and his interactions with people. And the description said that Jesus came to comfort the provoked and to provoke the comfortable. To those who are hurting, he reveals himself as the compassionate and present. Yet to the comfortable, most often the religious, he comes to provoke through questions. And he gives these provocative questions. And the religious folk, they clue in at this point, and they say to Jesus, "Hey, wait a minute, are you calling us out here? Are you calling us out when you say this for judgment, blind see, seeing not blind? Like, are you talking about us here?" And Jesus responds to them by basically saying, "The only thing that will ever get in your way of experiencing God is yourself. If you claim that you can see and you are all good, you're tricking yourself. And that's your choice." Jesus says the only thing that gets in our way of believing in him is ourselves. Delusions of self-sufficiency, thinking we're good on our own, thinking we can see all that we need to see entirely on our own. These traps that we all fall so easily into are what gets in our way of experiencing him. The only ones that do not see Jesus are the ones that don't think they need to. The only patient who doesn't access this doctor is the one who refuses to admit their need. Our access to Jesus is equal to our acknowledgement of need. Throughout the whole Bible, blindness is a metaphor to describe our ability to see or not see. Jesus is saying, if you think you're good, if you think you can see on your own, you're deluding yourself, and that's your choice. But for those who know they're blind, for those who know that they have a need, they will see. Because everyone who acknowledges their need for Jesus receives him. I'd like to be really clear for us all. Jesus' question of, "Do you believe?" is still extended to every one of us. And it's the most important question we will ever answer. It's designed to comfort. It's designed to provoke. Jesus' presence in the world is a fork in the road, and it separates between those who recognize their need and those who think they have it all locked and loaded, figured out. There's no such thing as neutral on this question. Questions are full of powerful potential. And none more than this one. Do you believe? Everyone lands yes or no. We believe and worship, or we don't. But look at this great promise from Romans 10. If we believe, it says, "If you declare with your mouth, 'Jesus is Lord,' and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved." How do we know we believe? We worship. Our lives are oriented differently. Like this blind man, when he believes in Jesus, he's worshiping him. His life is forever different. If we believe in Jesus, we worship him. And we would do well to ask ourselves, well, are our priorities different? Are our affections and values and calendars and bank accounts and hobbies, are all of these things different because we believe? Do we worship him? The Gospel of John gives more space to this man than any other character or person in the gospel, other than Jesus. Augustine and Thomas Aquinas both wrote, that's because this man represents all of humanity. Blind, at birth, but given sight because he chose to believe in Jesus. That can be the story of all of humanity. But look at the progression of this man. Because if it's true that this man is the story of us all, we would do well to acknowledge this man's trajectory. At the beginning, the blind man, formerly blind man, he says in verse 11, he says, the man they call Jesus. All right, so Jesus is someone that they talk about. Then a couple of verses later, he says, well, he is a prophet. Okay, he's not just a man, he's now a prophet. Verse 33, hey, Jesus, he's from God. But then at the end, after seeing Jesus, he's like, no, Jesus is God. And I orient my life around him. I worship him. Is Jesus becoming greater and greater in our lives? Is he becoming more necessary to us? Is he becoming more real and present and beautiful to us? Where are you at? Do you believe in Jesus? It's a question loaded with powerful potential. And so we want to end with an opportunity to declare that we believe in Jesus. That he is indeed the way, the truth, and the life. We are all at a fork in the road saying, do we believe yes or no? There's no such thing as the middle option. And there is no better day than today to choose to believe in him. To orient our lives around him. To say, yes, I believe and I worship you. For some of us, it might be the first time we've ever decided, I'm taking this path and this fork in the road. I'm going to believe in Jesus. If you believe in your heart, God raised him from the dead. If you declare with your mouth, Jesus is Lord, you will be saved, friends. And so we just want to give an opportunity for that to happen. Just in your own words, just tell Jesus, I believe in you, I need you, I look to you, I orient my life around you, I need you. And if you don't even know how to articulate that, I'm going to pray for all of us in just a few moments, and you can repeat some version of what I say. Just say, I believe. But let's pray. Lord, like this man in John 9, we're all born blind, but we need to see. I know how easy it is for me to think I got it. I'm good. To delude myself into some form of self-sufficiency, but Jesus, I need you. I confess that you are Lord. You're Lord of the universe. You're Lord of Canada. You're Lord of Calgary, but you are Lord of my life. Believe you came and died and rose again. You are King. I believe in you. So, Lord, thank you for pursuing us, talking with us in our pain, our brokenness, our wondering and wandering. We declare our need for you and we worship you as Lord today. We place our trust in you. We're going to sing one song together here, declaring our belief. Hey, if you prayed or if you've decided to believe in Jesus for the first time, just write it in the comments so we can just celebrate with you. Celebrate with heaven, celebrate with you. And let's worship together our Jesus, who is the way, the truth, and the life. Amen.